This is our topic. I have a list of words, and you can just see how the words land. Annoyance, vexation, exasperation, crossness, irritation, irritability, indignation, pique, displeasure, resentment, rage, fury, wrath, outrage, temper, irascibility, ill temper, spleen, ill humor, tetchiness, testiness, abhorrence, hatred, hate, loathing, detestation, odium, antipathy, hostility, disgust, revulsion, repugnance, horror, resistance, unwillingness, reluctance, avoidance, and evasion. That's our topic. Are you ready? Are you ready for it? That list cracks me up so much. I can relate to so many of those words. Can you too? Like odium. But this time, reading it through, I've read it through a few times, and this time, resistance. Like, ah, oh, sometimes I have so much resistance. Okay, so anger. We could say more seriously, like anger is our topic. Mindfulness of anger, and really working with ourselves when anger is here. This ill will, aversion would be some Buddhist words. So anger is a part of your and my, all of our wiring. It's part of the body system, right, that we all come with. And it is absolutely essential for our survival and our flourishing. It is an intelligent emotion, and it can be incredibly destructive when we get stuck in it. And when we lose our presence, when it takes over. So you could say that this talk is a like an inquiry into how to shift out of reacting out of anger, instead of reacting out of anger, instead responding wisely to what the anger is showing us, what it's telling us, what the message is. So that we can include a response that contains both wisdom and compassion rather than reactivity. So anger always has a message, and even like reluctance or resistance, there's always like there's a message there. So you could notice when this flavor irritation is arising, it could be like a mindfulness bell. Like for me, if I'm getting irritable, very often it's not like a big message. It's just like, oh, I'm hungry, or I need to drink water, or I need to kind of take care of myself for a minute. And even if in some circumstance it means I just have the opportunity to take a breath or two. Like, so sometimes this anger or irritation or hostility, this the message is something's going on physically for me. Might be different from you. Or sometimes it means I'm stretched thin. And then other times the message of the anger can be a message of boundaries have been crossed, or something in relationship actually needs to be said. So it is actually inevitable that we have clashes with each other, that we have needs. I don't think that we're going to ever grow out of having needs, right? Like we are actually wired to connect with each other. I've been doing this practice a lot recently with one hand on the face and one hand on the heart, this heart-hand connection to help regulate my nervous system. And if you get a little upset about anything, you could try it too and see if it helps, right? Like this sense of connecting. We're wired to connect to each other. So we need each other. We need each other. We need each other in the Sangha. We need each other to take care of each other. We need each other. So then it is inevitable that we'll kind of rub up against each other. We'll prick into each other sometimes. And that even the best and closest relationships Anger does get evoked. There's misunderstanding. Histories play out. Our histories, our individual histories, our collective histories. And we're sensitive. We're sensitive beings. So we humans have the capacity to collaborate. We have the capacity to cooperate and to sustain connection, even with this tendency that we all have. So anger, you could think of like anger, fear, rawness, limbic spiraling, anger and reactivity. I mean, really, it's kind of endemic right now. Maybe you've been experiencing it every time you listen to the news or read the news or go on social media, right? Like there's so much outrage right now. And I don't really know anyone that hasn't struggled with anger either in interpersonal relationships or in about society at large, our culture, our governments. So the inquiry then becomes, it's like a mindfulness spell. When we get poked or stabbed in a relationship or by reading the newspaper or online, what happens inside of you? What happens? Like, how do you work? Like, how do you actually work with that? Because it's important if we don't acknowledge it or work with it, it can really sway, it can color the whole day, it can impact our relationships. So, this noticing and tending to ourselves in it. Okay. So when somebody might criticize you, have you ever been criticized? That ever happened? Or somebody breaks a promise, that can happen too. Or somebody talks about you behind your back in a disparaging way, or somebody insults you or hurts a loved one. This can happen for me. I can get a lot of anger on behalf of people around me too. Do we instantly? Well, the answer is yes, sometimes, but that's why we're talking about it. When we lock into blame or defensiveness or aggression, right? Like that sense of locking down and getting stuck in it. This is a funny joke. A dog on a therapist's couch. The dog on the therapist's couch says, "I bark at everything. You can't go wrong that way." So some of us are primed with whatever comes up, we lash out. That's kind of how our system is habitually been working. Sometimes maybe we don't lash out outwardly, but we might lash out inwardly into spirals of self-criticism, self-aversion, even shame, like this inner or outer, it can turn either way. We might go into a mental looping of resentment, and it's hard. It's hard when that happens. It can really like be very sticky. Sometimes we act out and then we end up apologizing later. Irritability can be a habit. I've been studying this year the autonomic nervous system and our fight, flight, freeze system. So all of us, every single one of us, all humans have a nervous system that we are unconsciously or below the level of our awareness, scanning the environment, the internal environment, the physical environment, the environment in the surroundings, and then the environment between people. So all the time, unconsciously, we're looking for cues of safety and cues of danger. When the nervous system, so this is not something we're consciously doing, gets a cue of danger, we can then go into fight or flight, right? Like this irritability, this anger can flare up. And then we get lost and it can become like a trance of separation. And we become disconnected from the whole of our inner experience, each other and the web of life. So this fight or fright system, fight, flight, or fright, it's hard for me to say that, FFF system, it's a defensive mechanism. It's designed to keep us safe. It's not designed to help us connect and flourish and be curious and interested and intimate with ourselves and each other. So when the nervous system gets activated like this, we're in a defended state. So we are in a trance of separation rather than a trance or a not a trance or the wisdom of connection. And when we're in that state of fight, flight, or fright, the mind will tell a story that mirrors that. Did you ever notice that? Like when you get angry about something, then the mind just tells the same story over and over and over. It's driven by the state in the nervous system. And then when we calm down, we might do this practice, or we might do some breathing, or we might do some meditation, or we might go in nature. And then we start to open, the nervous system settles, and then we can start to open to our own wisdom and find ways to connect. In this lineage, in this tradition, loving kindness practice is an antidote to chronic patterns of irritability and anger. And we start with this loving kindness practice for ourselves. So some of us have this habit pattern of irritability and anger, and metta is a recommended practice. Isn't that lovely? It's a recommended practice to help retrain our system. So there's three principles that I could talk about that I'd like to talk about tonight. The first is that anger is a natural and necessary, it's an intelligent emotion that lets us know when we have a need or have met an obstacle and we need to act. So it can push us into action, right? Sometimes it's unskillful action, but it can push us into action. So this first principle, it's a natural, necessary, intelligent emotion. The second principle, when we get hijacked, so when the nervous system gets dysregulated, when we're in a state of fight, flight, or fright, when we've gotten hijacked, our whole identity gets organized around the anger. And then it becomes not just a state of mind, but a trait. And that's when we suffer. Right? When we get hooked into it, we take identity as it, that's when the suffering happens. And this third principle is that it can be done, we can learn to pause and deepen presence. And then we can transform our own life in a way that gives us freedom. It is possible to pause and bring attention inwards so that we can respond in a way that's more powerful. Meaning, it's bringing in our sense of intimacy with self and other and speaking from wisdom. So, this pause is like a U-turn where we turn around and see for ourselves what is going on. And so often when anger arises, we're so fixated on the outer thing that we forget to notice, like, what is the need here? What's going on? So this pause and U-turn in to tend to our own system can bring, when we start to do this, we can transform our lives and it brings freedom. So there's an underlying attitude with our mindfulness practice that we can free ourselves from the habit of getting angry and fixating outward. That we can. So I was giving this talk, I think it was just last weekend, and I said this, and it was controversial. So just I'm going to say it here and see what you think about it. So, we can take 100% responsibility for our own experience. We can take 100% responsibility for our own experience. So we don't have to be responsible for how others are behaving. We can't, in fact, be responsible as much as we might want to change the world. We cannot be responsible for how other people behave, but we can be responsible for ourselves, for how we hold ourselves, and how we then respond. Thich Nhat Hanh, he talks about anger. He talks about when anger arises, to hold ourselves like a caregiver holding an angry baby, an upset baby. Like if a baby has been taking a nap and wakes up and it's got a wet diaper and is really uncomfortable, and the baby, like the legs and arms get rigid and angry, right? Like this happens to us as adults. We get something happens, we're uncomfortable, and we get angry and rigid. It's that nervous system. And so in this Thich Nhat Hanh teaching, we will be like the caregiver coming and holding the baby. I love this metaphor so much because it's like we're both the baby and the caregiver. We're both, right? We're the angry one, and we're holding with our mindfulness, with our warm heart. So our anger is important. If we can't access our anger, maybe you've met someone, or maybe you are one of those people that it's difficult for you to feel angry. It can cause a lot of suffering. Can cause a tremendous amount of suffering. And so it's part of being a human being, and I think it's important that we can forgive ourselves for being angry. I don't mean forgive ourselves because anger is bad and needs forgiving, but because anger is like the weather. It's an inner weather system, and that it's okay that the rage is here. It's okay, right? That's really our first step in being mindful, is knowing that it's here and acknowledging it's here. Because the rage is intelligent. When we're angry, there's an unmet need. If we stay in the outward focus, the outward directed, we miss the unmet need. We miss that we have a need to feel safe. We have a need to be respected, or whatever it might be. So this U-turn, this turning, this mindfulness bell to turn in and sense the unmet need, and that it has a function. The Tibetan Buddhists describe the essence of anger as wise discrimination. Isn't that interesting? The essence of anger is wise. So some needs not being met, whether it's like caring for the body. So I am going to ask you, at the end of the talk, like, what are your, maybe it's too personal, we'll see how it goes. You all know each other well, but like, what causes you to be angry? What makes you irritable? What makes you angry? And what does it feel like, right? Like, what is it? So we actually know, because it might be sometimes really obvious and sometimes maybe not so obvious. Or maybe what are your flavors of anger too? Like, how does it show up for you? Like, for me, I'm really noticing today that resistance is part of mine. So it's important to get a hold of our own habit patterning, right? So this mindfulness, like beginning to know ourselves around it. So how do we work with ourselves? How do we pause? How do we pause and be able to notice this? In the beginning, we can start identifying what is our primary pattern for getting angry. Our primary, like, pattern, like that's only one single pattern, right? But that we can have, like, sort of like common things we go to. So there could be this tendency to directly lash out in anger. I found this quote. I could not find out who it was attributed to. There's a whole bunch of people. But it goes like this: if you speak when angry, you'll make the best speech you'll ever regret. Right? So some of us do that. We lash out in anger. Some of us have patterns of passive aggressive approaches. So we withhold our affection. Or we might do indirect put downs or judgments, or trying to control another person with guilt or whatever, but not being direct. Sometimes we might have patterns of punishing, threatening, intimidating to get somebody to behave. I'll put that in quotes, behave. I thought this was interesting. That gossip and slander, I reflected on this. Gossip and slander could be a form of anger. And I think that's really true. Like, if I look at my own behavior around when I start talking about someone else, often there's like a little underlying something there, something, something. And there can also be a flavor of inner resentment, or even like if we go into shame, right? Like, this is a common human thing too. That's the freeze on the fight or freeze. That's the shame. Like, that's pretty common too. And that's like a kind of inner anger, inner resentment. So, with any of these, when we stay fixated on the thing we're angry about, we're not going to able to meet our own needs that's underneath the anger. Do you, and this is actually a sincere question to think about, do you get your needs met with any of these methods? Like, really, long term, do you? People get very defensive when we do this, right? Including ourselves when we turn it inward on ourselves. And we don't end up getting our needs met and the intimacy doesn't happen. What did Gandhi say? An eye for an eye makes the whole world blind. I also love that Buddhism is sometimes talked about as a middle way path. And there's a lot of different ways to talk about what that means. And one way to talk about what it means to be a middle way path is that we're not indulging, nor are we repressing. So, with anger or resentment or ill will or aversion, we're not going to indulge it. And what do I mean by indulge it? When we're lost in it. So, when it sounds so like, when I say it like that, when we're lost in it, it sounds so conscious. Like, it's so easy when I'm lost in anger. I could just have a force of will and pull myself out of it so I'm not indulging it. But we do indulge, and sometimes it can take a force of will, but it's a different kind of willpower. It might be tending to your nervous system, like I was saying earlier, right? Like, trying to calm ourselves, doing a three count in breath, a six count out breath, tending to the nervous system. So it's not like an intellectual trying to control when we've indulged in the anger. It's more like the caregiver holding the angry baby, right? Like this sense of they're there. And, like the caregiver might kiss the baby's head and bounce the baby a little bit. We can do this for ourselves. And I kind of mean this literally. Right? Like, we might need to bounce or like put our hand on our head, like we're getting kissed, right? So that we're actually not indulging our anger, but nor are we repressing it. So we might be conditioned by our gender or our childhood to avoid anger. We might have gotten messages from our family or from the culture at large that anger is bad. Or we might be conditioned by our family to hold on to resentments, but neither is helpful. And really, the key here, the key is mindfulness so that we can acknowledge what's here and learn from it. So we can turn towards ourself and see that it's a weather system that's moving through, that it carries a message. So it's a weather system, it's impermanent. Even if you have strong habit patterns of anger and aversion and ill will, any person is never going to be always in that state. It's impermanent. It's not who you are. It's impersonal. It's in our nervous systems. It's part of being a human being. So it's not personal to you. It's part of the whole system of being a human. And it carries suffering. When we hold on to it, it burns. It, in some ways, when we hold on to it, when we hold on to it, it causes a lot of suffering for ourselves. It can weigh us down. So we can get familiar with our own patterning and notice the suffering of it. So you can think about a time when you were angry and what style of aggression it was, maybe the long spin of resentment. And then we can begin to alter the patterning. We begin with this liberating attitude, which undoes victimhood, that we are this liberating attitude that we are 100% responsible for our own experience. It's a liberating attitude to take responsibility for ourselves, because otherwise we're sort of at the sway of the world, right? So that when we are pricked or hurt, or when there's aversion or irritability or anger, that we are 100% able to respond to ourselves and the other in a way that takes care of our own experience with understanding and empathy. So it can be really powerful to set an intention when you remember. To set an intention where you might say to yourself, please, may this serve deepening connection and understanding. Or something like, please, may I wake up through this. Right? So just this intention. So this is a practice, like everything we learn about in this lineage, it's all a practice. And what I mean by that is that it's not a perfect. And what I mean by that is that it's sometimes we'll be able to do it and sometimes we won't. And that's okay because every time we do and we remember to set the intention or we remember to pause, we make it more likely that we'll do it again. And so that we can begin to build these habit patterns. And if you think about, how long you've been alive. And then in some ways, there's a lot of research showing that we carry the generational patterns through epigenetics from our families. And so these patterns of ill will and anger and aversion, they're old. And it doesn't mean that we are helpless to them, but it does mean that we can let ourselves off the hook, that it's a practice. And that it's not fixed. That's another thing by what I mean when it's a practice, that it's not fixed. It's going to be different all the time. It's alive and messy. It's human. So, setting an intention when you notice, when there's a little bit of mindfulness, that's why we talk about it too, so that we can remember, oh yeah, like, oh, I'm feeling really grumpy right now, or I'm feeling really angry right now. And then we could set this intention, please may this serve deepening connection and understanding. Or we might say, please may I wake up through this. And as soon as you do that, as soon as you say that in your heart, you're taking 100% responsibility. Isn't that beautiful? I think that's beautiful. So when you notice that you've become activated or hooked, or anger, like whatever the word might be, this first step, step one, is to pause. So if you're activated, there is no way you can create a new pattern of response, a new neural pathway, unless you pause. So what that means is that you will get caught and you will lose it. We lose it. At times, we forgive ourselves, it's okay. Sometimes we just can't pause and we don't always have that control, but sometimes we do, and that's brilliant that we can have that choice sometimes. So the place to attend to is inside of us. So we turn to and attend to what is inside of us. And we have this lovely rain mnemonic, which I know for a fact. That if you've been to this Sangha for a while, you've heard of this rain mnemonic. It's from Michelle McDonald, and then Tara Brach has kind of popularized it. This rain, the R, to recognize what's happening. Oh, I'm irritable right now. To allow it, to acknowledge it. Right? So we're not irritable about being irritable. I can do that too, right? So recognize it's here, allow it to be here. And then this investigation, this How does it feel in the body? What is the unmet need here? What is the unmet need? And then the N, which is to non-identify, to remember that it's part of being a human, that it's not who you are. And that we can nurture ourselves in it, that image of the caregiver and the baby, this nurturing aspect of it. And then when we do that, when we've paused and we've done a little bit of rain, a little bit of rain, we can take care of ourselves and the relationship. So it's not suppressing the anger, but it's also not acting out. But we can let it guide us into discovering how to take care of our needs. And then this definitely ties in with wise speech, right? Because that would be the natural next step when we've taken the pause and we have our rain mnemonic. And then what needs to be said? Is it timely? Is it true? Is it useful? Can it be heard? Is it kind? So when you did this, I felt this. And I need this, right? Like, so this kind of wise speech. All right, my friends, it's a funny ending, but I did want to hear from you all because I wanted to open, because this is a pretty rich topic. So I wanted to open to hear any comments. Any comments are very welcome. I always learn from what you have to say, whether it's a question or something you know. And then I did want to hear in general also, or in addition, like, what makes you angry? What makes you irritable? How does it feel in your body? How do you know? Like, how do you, oh, Patty's up. Okay, go ahead, Patty. Go ahead. Unmute yourself.
Thank you, Ashley. That was very timely and very important. I have noticed my anger when I read the news or hear the news. If I really pay attention to it, underneath it, there's always sadness. I'm always sad. My heart is breaking. And I keep telling myself, this is difficult. This is not easy. This is hard. And then I tell myself, this too shall pass. And then I wean myself from the source of the aggravation. I take a day off from reading the news. But that's my reaction. Now, it's much easier to do that in that context. The one-on-one with other people is harder because when I state my needs, it's often misunderstood or taken personally. And it feels like an attack to someone else when I say what I need, even though it has nothing to do with the other person being wrong or doing something wrong. It just, some people just take it as an attack. So on the global level, I have better practice at comforting myself and dealing with it. But on the one-on-one level, I'm not so good at it yet.
Thank you, Patty. I think you bring up really good points. I love your level of awareness. And yes, it's very messy with other people, right? Like it can be very hard and messy. Thank you, Patty. And then let's see, Mary Page.
Ashley, I loved what you had to say, and I agree completely that we are responsible for our own experience, regardless. And I'm a therapist and I do a lot of couples work, and that's absolutely, so essential for, that's what I teach too. Just that we have to be able to own our experience and then communicate it in a loving way as best we can. And it's so funny, as you were talking, I got a text came in from someone and I went, oh!
Yeah,
was just, the time was so perfect, and I thought, okay, I'm gonna handle this. It was so timely. Anyway, thanks so much, Ashley. Appreciate it.
you, Mary Page. I love that. That's really brilliant, the timing on that. It's awesome. All right, Zoe, let's hear from you.
So this topic was perfect because I've gotten caught a few times this week. And what I notice is I've gotten a lot more skillful over the years with what I say in response to a situation that clearly should make most people angry. So I mean I don't get reactive as often in the moment, and I am measured in my response and all of that. But what I notice is my work situation is a rich ground of stuff. And it doesn't just start with anger. It starts with going in and having on my an overly full plate of things to do, so that I start off feeling badly. There's an undertone of feeling taken for granted or overworked, used, and put upon, you know. And then all day long, I get texts every 2 minutes, every phone calls every 5 minutes, all day long for 9 hours. Do this, do that, and now. And so there's an onslaught of emotion continuously. And then layered on top of that are professionals who you would think, because of their degrees and their education and their physician level degrees, that they would be good communicators. And they're some of the worst of the worst. And I keep saying this keeps coming up in my mind, like, where's the emotional intelligence here? Because, you know, the interactions can be so destructive sometimes, the communications. And so the hard part is the repetitive and the accumulative. And because of the different roles, you don't get to resolve these things. You can't answer back. You can't say what you just said right now was not appropriate, or you know, you can't answer back to them. You can't tell them that they just said something either hurtful or inappropriate or unprofessional. You just have to take it. And you might be able to say something to your manager, but oftentimes it never goes anywhere. It doesn't get resolved. And so layered on all the time, it's like icing on a cake. It's so heavy with all this stuff that sometimes it's just hard to unpack all of it. And so there is a lot of the replay in the mind, because you can't say it to the person that you need to say, look, when you did that, I felt this, and this was not helpful, you know, in so many ways. So it's hard sometimes to let all of it go. I know I try to let most of it go, but sometimes, you know, you see the conversations do circle for a while until they finally just unravel, because there doesn't seem to be a good way to discharge them.
I mean, I think what you're pointing to is the actual like real intensity of on the ground, like putting these principles into action. And what I'm mostly hearing for you is finding ways to tend to yourself, because the circumstance, if you can't like fix it with the other person, so how do you hold yourself in that, right? Like in that dysregulation and in that environment that is hard. I mean, it sounds super challenging. And what I mean by how do you tend to that is maybe like, can you like have inner self-talk or this thing? I don't know if you could do that at work, or holding hands with yourself, like so that you're really as best you can holding yourself within that challenge, because it sounds, it's the reality of the situation is that you can't change the other person. So how can you tend to yourself?
I'm struggling with it, and the goal is to get out of the environment, because 5 minute lunches and 9 hour work days aren't adding up. There's no time to go get away and go for a walk. And coming home, and what I'm becoming aware of is I'm waking up in the middle of the night and having bad dreams about work. And this is happening now repetitively, so that I know I'm not processing it correctly, because it's piling on. And therefore, I know something's got to give at some point. I mean, there has to be a solution, a bigger solution to the problem. And that's what happens in this job a lot, is there's a high burnout rate and a high turnover rate, because you can't get resolution for it in the job, so you have to leave. And so I'm finding I'm wishing for the escape hatch, to finally make that happen.
I wonder if that is the wisdom, right? Like that is the wisdom that's underneath, right, for you.
Yeah, maybe so. But thank you for
Thank
the
you.
opportunity to talk about it. It really helps because I normally can't. I appreciate it. Thank you.
And then, okay, I'm just reading the chat, and Patty heard the cat chat chanting too. I know, I was trying to put it on mute. So, okay. And then Mary Kelly, let's hear from you.
So mine's a little different. I was recently on a retreat and it was really lovely. And I had a one morning, I had just lovely meditation. It was just delightful. And then in the afternoon, grumbly me showed up big time. Irritable me showed up big time. There was no story, actually. There was no story. And then I did this inward, we were doing this inward dwelling, and I was just sat there with, oh my goodness, there's this committee member who's just really grumbly. And what I realized is there's aspects of myself that are not my favorites. And this one was just wanting to be heard, and it just really, pay attention to me. Give me some time. And it was really interesting. And I just was like, oh, sweetheart, there's things that you want, there's things that you need. And what I ended up doing was I sat for that a little bit. And one of the things the teacher was talking about, accompany yourself. So I accompanied my entire self, all those little bits and pieces that I didn't like. And we went outside because for me, that's a good thing. And we took all of us for a nice walk in nature. And for me, a lot of times that is like talk to myself with kindness. And for me, one of the things to do is just go take a walk, sweetheart. It's okay. I will listen to what you have to say. And I like what you say. You don't have to be perfect. And there's always going to be parts of yourself that you're not that thrilled with. Physically, mentally, emotionally, little bits and pieces. And they are still okay. And it was really a very sweet walk that I took.
Thank you, Mary Kelly. You're reminding me, that's such a beautiful description. So part of this program that I'm in on the nervous system regulation is they one of the themes of the past month was to offer loving kindness to yourself, which of course we do in this practice. But they had us bring to mind a part of yourself that you don't like for the as the difficult person, the part of yourself to offer loving kindness to, as you said, the committee member. That's great language, right? Like offer, not just offering loving kindness to the part of me that's, together and does meditation and all that parts, like offer loving kindness to our committee members that are grumpy or that are like whatever it might be. So that's really beautiful. Yeah, thank you, Mary Kelly. Thank you. And Deborah, we'll have you be the last one because we are running out of time.
First of all, thank you, and it's wonderful to see you. And I'm just grinning from ear to ear because I'm hearing in your talk nonviolent communication training, polyvagal theory, internal family systems, and I just love that stuff. And I love the way these are modern things, but it's all in the Dharma from thousands of years ago. And I was listening to Kristen Neff last night. Self-compassion guru. And she was saying in different words exactly what you were saying tonight about be the caretaker and the baby. And she actually referenced internal family systems, the part that's bitching, moaning, or complaining, or crying, or sad, or despairing. I can relate to everybody else's share tonight. But to hear that voice and to give it some loving kindness, to give it some compassion, and then to yourself. the caretaker of that baby. And also, I just want to thank you again for reminding me about putting my hand on that prefrontal cortex that doesn't shut up, and the heart. The storytelling, HPA, but prefrontal at the same time. So it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Deborah.